The Life of Dwight L. Moody, Chapter 35, In Pearl on the Deep. At the close of this unusual trying campaign, Mr. Moody passed through an experience that left a most solemn and lasting impression upon his mind. In November, after an absence of over 12 months, he secured passage for himself and his son on the North German Lloyd Line from Southampton for New York. A small company gathered at the station in London to see him off, and in company with two friends and his son, he started for Southampton. The journey found Mr. Moody in the best of spirits. To be again on his way home had been a long-anticipated pleasure, and it was expected that a week later we would find him back in America. The last goodbyes were said at Southampton, and the party went on board the Spree, at this time one of the fastest vessels of the line. When about 3 days on our journey, I remember, says Mr. Moody in describing this event, I was lying on my couch, as I generally do at sea, congratulating myself on my good fortune and feeling very thankful to God. I considered myself a very fortunate man, for in all my travels by land and sea, I had never been in any accident of a serious nature. While engaged with these grateful thoughts, I was startled by a terrible crash and shock, as if the vessel had been driven on a rock. I did not at first feel much anxiety. Perhaps I was too ill to think about it. My son jumped from his berth and rushed on deck. He was back again in a few moments, exclaiming that the shaft was broken and the vessel sinking. I did not at first believe that it could be so bad, but concluded to dress and go on deck. The report was only too true. The ship's passengers were naturally aroused, but in answer to frightening inquiries, they were assured that it was only a broken shaft. The serious nature of the accident soon became evident, however, as other passengers rushed on deck, declaring that their cabins were rapidly filling with water. Later, it was found that the two fractured ends of the shaft, in revolting, had broken the steer tube, admitting water into the two aftermath compartments, which were immediately filled. The bulkheads between the compartments were closed at once and braced with beams to resist the pressure of the water. For 2 days, the ship drifted in this helpless condition in momentary peril from the tremendous force of the water in the flooded compartments, which beat with tremendous force as the ship rolled against the next compartment. But for the skill of Captain Willard Gerard and his efficient engineers, Monsieur M-E-I-S-S-E-L, and Baum, the ship would have soon floundered. The officers and crew did all they could to save the vessel, but it was soon found that the pumps were useless, for the water poured into the ship too rapidly to be controlled. There was nothing more in the power of man to do, and the ship was absolutely helpless, while the passengers could only stand still on the poor drifting, sinking ship and look into our possible watery graves. All this time, unknown to the passengers, the officers were making preparation for the last resort. The lifeboats were all put in readiness. Provisions were prepared. Life preservers were brought out. The officers were armed with revolvers so as to be able to enforce their orders, and it was only a question of whether to launch the boats at once or wait. The sea was heavy, and the boat could hardly live in it. At noon, the captain told the passengers that he had the water under control and was in hopes of drifting in the way of some passing vessel. The ship's bow was now high in the air, while the stern seemed to settle more and more. The sea was very rough. The ship rolled from side to side, launching fearfully. The captain tried to keep up hope by telling the anxious people that they would probably drift in the way of a ship by 3 o'clock that afternoon. But the night closed in upon them without the sign of a sail. That was an awful night, the darkest in all our lives, several hundred men, women, and children. Looking for the doom that seemed to be settled upon us, no one dared to sleep. We were all called together in the saloon of the first cabin, Jews, Protestants, Catholics, and skeptics, although I doubt if at any time there were more skeptics among us. The agony and suspense were too great for words. With blanched faces and trembling hearts, the passengers looked at one another as if trying to read the faces of those about them, what no one dared to speak. Rockets flamed into the sky, but there was no answer. We were drifting out of the traces of the great steamers. Every hour seemed to increase the danger of the situation. Sunday morning dawned without hope or help. Up to that time, no suggestion for religious services had been made. To have done that would almost certainly have produced a panic, and the awful silence and dread that prevailed. A word about religion would have suggested the most terrible things to the passengers. It was necessary to divert their minds, if possible, or they would break under the strain. But as the second night came on, I asked General O.O. Howard, who was with us, to secure the captain's permission for a service in the saloon. The captain said, "Most certainly, I am that kind too." We gave notice of the meeting, and to our surprise, nearly every passenger attended, and I think everybody prayed, skeptics and all. With one arm clasping a pillar to secure myself on the reeling vessel, I tried to read Psalms 91, and we prayed that God would still the raging of the sea and bring us to our desired haven. It was a new psalm to me from that hour. The 11th verse touched me very deeply. It was like a voice of divine assurance, and it seemed a very real thing as I read, "He shall give his angels charge over thee, to keep thee in all thy ways." Surely he did it. I read also from Psalms 107, verses 20 through 31. One lady thought these words must have been written for the occasion, and afterwards asked to use the book for herself, to see the book for herself. A German translated verse by verse as I read, for the benefit of his countrymen. I was passing through a new experience. I had thought myself superior to the fear of death. I had often preached on the subject and urged Christians to realize this victory of faith. During the Civil War, I had been under fire without fear. I was in Chicago during the great cholera epidemic and went around with the doctors visiting the sick and dying, where they could go on to look after the bodies of men. I said I could go on to look after their souls. I remembered a case of smallpox where the sufferer's conditions was beyond description. Yet I went to the bedside of the poor sufferer again and again with Bible and prayer for Jesus' sake. In all this, I had no fear of death. But on the sinking ship, it was different. There was no cloud between my soul and my Savior. I knew my sins had been put away, and that if I died there, it would only be to wake up in heaven. That was all settled long ago. But as my thoughts went out to my loved ones at home, my wife, my children, my friends on both sides of the sea, the schools and all the interests so dear to me, and as I realized that perhaps the next hour would separate me forever from all these, so far as this world was concerned, I confess it almost broke me down. It was the darkest hour of my life. I could not endure it. I must have relief, and relief came in prayer. God heard my cry, enabled me to say from the depths of my heart, "Thy will be done." Sweet peace came to my heart. Let it be Northfield or heaven, it made no difference now. I went to bed, fell asleep almost immediately, and never slept more soundly in all my life. Out of the depths I cried unto my Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. I can no more doubt that God gave answer to my prayer for relief than I can doubt my own existence. About 3 o'clock at night, I was aroused from my sound sleep by my son's voice. "Come on deck, Father," he said. I followed him, and he pointed to a far-off light, rising and sinking on the sea. It was a messenger of deliverance to us. It proved to be the light of a steamer, Lake Huron, brought from Montreal to Liverpool, whose lookout had seen our signals of distress and supposed it was a vessel in flames. Oh, the joy of that moment when these 700 despaired passengers beheld the approaching ship. Who can ever forget it? But now the question was, can this small steamer tow the helpless spree 1,000 miles to Queenstown? Every moment was passed in the intensest anxiety and prayer. It was a brave and perilous undertaking. The vessels were at last connected by 2 great cables. If a storm arose, they would snap like a thread, and we must be left to our fate. But I had no fear. God would finish the work he had begun. The waves were calm, the cables held, and our steamer moved in the wake of the Huron. There were storms all about us, but they came not nigh our broken ship. 7 days after the accident, by the good hand of God upon us, we were able to hold a joyous Thanksgiving service in the harbor of Queenstown. The rescuing ship that God sent to us in our distress had just sufficient power to tow our steamer and just enough coal to take her into port. Her captain was a man of prayer. He besought God's help to enable them to accomplish their dangerous and difficult task, and God answered the united prayers of the distressed voyagers and brought us to our desired haven. As has been said, the experience of those days upon the Atlantic left a lasting impression upon Mr. Moody. But through it all, he was thinking of others. His tender heart was torn by the scenes of anguish as mothers wept over their children and fathers pleaded with God to spare them the sight of their son's destruction. During the first few hours after the danger was known, he had little to say. Once he spoke of a probable outcome of the accident to his son. I had hoped to have a few more years of work. I had planned to preach the gospel in Chicago next summer, and I want to do some more work on the schools at Northfield and Chicago. But if my work is ended, why, it's all right. It's hard for you, though, with your life work just beginning. If it's God's will, however, it's all for the best. And there he left it. Strangely enough, this experience apparently cured Mr. Moody of his old enemy, seasickness, an engaging passage of the ETRURIA from Queenstown to New York. He was able to enjoy every moment of the trip. His arrival in America was the occasion for great and sincere congratulation. After a brief interview with the friends gathered to welcome him, Mr. Moody and the members of his family started for home, reaching Northfield that evening. What a reception was accorded him as he approached the scene so dear to his heart. As the express train rushed out of the darkness and drew up at the Mount Hermon School Station, hundreds of torches flashed in the darkness. A brass band sounded its welcome, and cheers rang from 300 students. Up to the car windows and along the platform streamed a crowd of young men. "Where is he?" cried a score of voices, and quicker than it takes to tell it came the answer. "Here, back there." On the lower steps of the car platform stood the man they wanted, bareheaded, his face beaming with joy at such a welcome from his boys after a year's absence. The cheers were still ringing when the train pulled out for South Vernon, where Mr. and Mrs. Moody left it for their drive across the river to Northfield. At Reveal Hall, the first of the seminary buildings, his girls had gathered for a welcome less noisy but no less hearty. From his carriage, Mr. Moody told them that God had answered their prayer for him in his hour of danger, and that his first word, now he was among his own again, must be one of testimony to God's faithfulness and mercy. It was characteristic of the man whose big-heartedness made him beloved by this great company of students, that before he entered his own home, he went first to the house nearby to see his aged mother. The next morning, a clear, crisp New England winter Sabbath, the Mount Hermon boys walked 4 miles to join in the morning worship in Northfield Church with the young ladies of the seminary and the townspeople. In place of the usual sermon, Mr. Moody told in simple, heartfelt words the thrilling story of the voyage.